Welcome to our newest season of Humane Podcast in 2021. Humane is your first look at the startups and industry titans that are leading and disrupting ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education. I am your host, David Jacobovich, and this is Humane. If you like this episode, remember to subscribe and leave a review. Now, on to our show. Welcome, listeners, to the Humane Podcast, where we're going to deep dive today into all things data and data insights with Ben Zweig, who is the CEO and founder of Revelio Labs. Today's episode features Ben, who not only is a startup founder, but he's also an adjunct professor at NYU Stern in New York City. I've had the great chance and pleasure to meet Ben over the past year, learning more about his startup, participating during his capital raise, and hearing about all the great insights that he and his team share with their insights about the workforce and the future of work. Ben, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, David. Sounds good.
Well, I'm really excited to learn not only about what you've done and how we participated together, but let's rewind for our audience. Can you share a little bit about your career and what brought you to today?
Yeah, sure. So I started my career in academia. I was doing a PhD in economics and really specialized in labor economics. So I was always very interested in labor data and understanding occupational dynamics, social mobility, things like that. And then really my first job was as a data scientist. This was very early on at a hedge fund in New York. It was an emerging markets hedge fund. I started that in 2012. And that was kind of interesting. I was like the lone data scientist on the desk. So that was kind of interesting. And then went to work at IBM in their internal data science team. It was called the Chief Analytics Office. And there started working on all sorts of projects related to workforce analytics and workforce optimization. So that was really interesting. And you know, kind of merge these two worlds of data science and labor economics, which I was really passionate about. And that's really where my co-founder and I started getting the idea behind Revelio Labs, which is really to create a universal HR database and, you know, help companies improve their performance and investors understand companies more deeply. So that was kind of the impetus behind what we're doing now. So we started Revelio Labs in early 2019. And it's been an exciting ride.
Now, I think it's so fascinating, this whole field of workforce analytics. Myself, one of the early companies I worked with was ADP, and I worked in the PEO division with payroll and looking and seeing how that impacted jobs and the creation and the movement of workforces. So I'm really passionate about what you and your team are doing. As you've been scaling up the company the last few years, what are some of the insights that you've uncovered that you think is really fascinating that you enjoy seeing in the market or you've discovered?
Yeah, it's an interesting time to be analyzing this because everyone cares about labor dynamics these days, especially with COVID and the Great Resignation. So this is such a big topic. But I think what we're finding interesting is actually fundamentally basic things that are not known about a company. So even just, you know, how many employees do they have across occupations? You know, how many engineers does this company have? How many salespeople? How is that changing? What's their attrition rate of key roles? What's their hiring rate of key roles? How much are companies paying? You know, you can really get a very deep view of what's happening within a company just by tracking their talent dynamics. So, you know, one analogy I really like, you know, especially for investment management, when they're looking to understand companies is like, let's say you're buying a car and you take it to the mechanic to see if it's healthy, right? Imagine if that mechanic could only look at the speedometer. It would be ridiculous, right? You want the mechanic to actually look under the hood, look at the engine. And that's sort of what we think we're enabling. So investment management today is mostly, you know, people spend a lot of time looking at indicators of performance, financial metrics. And I think what we want to enable is a much deeper view, a view under the hood of companies. And that is people, you know, the engine of a company, the engine of every company is the talent. So that's kind of what we want to look at. And we're really just scratching the surface now, but there's so many kind of interesting insights about, you know, where people are coming from when they get hired, where people leave when they quit, you know, how satisfied the employees are. I mean, it's really endless. There's countless possibilities of how this data can be analyzed.
Now, Ben, you mentioned the big topic that I think many of our listeners have seen, not only on LinkedIn Insights, but also throughout the news, this great resignation. And this is something that I think certain economists did see coming, that when the pandemic was going to end, that a lot of people, you know, were just really needing to take a break. And that's what's led to this great resignation of a lot of talent, both technical and non-technical, departing in masses from their jobs. And this is across the generations. We're seeing this from the Gen Zs all the way through the boomers. And what have you uncovered around the great resignation, or how do you think that will impact technical hiring and pipelines for companies?
Yeah. So it's a really fascinating phenomenon. I don't think we've ever seen something like this in our lifetimes, but I think it's exciting that workers are empowered more than they have been. But what we're really trying to uncover is the heterogeneity across different subgroups of employees. So we know that attrition rates are higher, quits are higher, people are leaving the labor force, people are hopping onto new jobs much more than they have been. But that's not true across all occupational groups. It's not true across all geographies. So we're really trying to find out where those shortages and where that wage pressure is highest. And it's typically more among blue-collar workers, which we had a paper that came out jointly with Barclays Equity Research, where we developed some trading strategies based on that phenomenon. So that was kind of interesting. But even just in my personal anecdotal experience, you know, we're seeing it for high-skilled workers too. So we're trying to hire quite a lot, and we've, you know, data scientists, software engineers, data engineers, economists, and it's really tough. I mean, it's hard to find good people, and salaries are getting higher and higher. So there's definitely pressure on the employer side.
And a lot of that pressure we're seeing here on the tail end of 2021, though I am excited for where we're going to go in 2022. Personally as well, you know, what I've seen working for multiple startups is that technical hiring and non-technical hiring has been very hard to fill during much of the pandemic because everything went remote and distributed. But now with this return to the hybrid workforce and for many to in-person, there does present that opportunity that there are a lot of openings for careers and for job seekers. That could be promising, especially if you're searching now for a new career path.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the workers that were really most hard hit from remote work are really junior employees. I think they're just getting started. They need that mentorship, and it's much harder to feel like you're developing and learning from others in a remote environment. But I think as we're sort of going back, you know, the more senior positions, I think we'll probably not have that same benefit as junior employees of going back to the office. And that's really because so much of the day-to-day for more management positions are on Zoom. And if you're on Zoom meetings all day at home, that's one thing. But if you're on Zoom meetings all day from the office, that's kind of the worst of both worlds. So that's probably not going away anytime soon. So it makes me a little bit cautiously optimistic. I'm more optimistic for more junior employees and more pessimistic, I guess, on what that means for management roles.
Now, talking about the future of work and the future of cities, I know we're both in the New York City area, the greatest city in the world, and New York is up and coming again, right? We've seen in the last few labor reports that building occupancies are up to a little bit north of 28%, which sounds like not that much, but at the height of the pandemic, it was down to only about 10%, right? So we're getting back up there. We're almost to a third occupancy. Are you seeing any insights for those trends going into 2022 into the 30s, 40s, or 60%?
So New York has had a spectacular recovery. I think earlier on, there was a lot of movement from tech hubs to Texas, Florida. You know, that was a big trend. That's something that we've seen a lot of. That has slowed recently. And I think Yeah, I think that that phenomenon will probably slow down. But yeah, we've seen a lot of this return to New York City. Yeah, it's I don't know exactly. Yeah, we don't have any like additional insight on that. Like, I don't know if we have a specific forecast, but it seems like a positive trend.
Right. And beyond these trends and the data that we're seeing, you're also now running a new course at NYU Stern called The Future of Work. I'm so fascinated by this because everyone's been talking about the future of work for the past 2 decades. COVID happens. Future of work's here. It's here now. And now you got this new course. Can you share with us what is the future of work in the classroom?
Yeah, it's really exciting. I've been trying to push this class for a few years, but didn't quite brand it properly. So I'd been teaching classes in data science and econometrics for a while, and you know, trying to transition to something a little bit more related to labor economics and human capital. So I'd been proposing classes around the economics of human capital and things like that, and there wasn't really a tremendous amount of interest. But then, you know, had this moment where I was like, oh, maybe it should be called The Future of Work. And then, you know, the next day it was just like, okay, the dean's excited. Everyone's like, everyone wants to make this course happen. So it's a little bit of a branding trick. But I think I'm really excited about how it will go because there is so much interest in it. So the way we're organizing it is basically the first chunk of it will be around the foundations of the labor market. You know, what are occupations? How do we assess activities and skills and think through kind of, you know, the dynamics of employment and contract labor and hiring, all the kind of like foundations of the labor market. And then really, really using those foundations to understand the hot topics of the day. So automation, remote work, the gig economy, kind of getting into these more topical areas. And then in the last chunk, you know, thinking through what are the applications for businesses, for workers, for governments, for entrepreneurs. So I think thinking through the applications is also a really exciting part of it.
One area from the syllabus I'd like to highlight on, and perhaps you can tease for the audience some of that, which is around the gig economy. And the gig economy has been continuing to grow in the last few years, of course, without so much as some controversy, as we've seen in California with some of the companies like Lyft and Uber and DoorDash, who've had different opinions on classification of gig versus not gig, or you know, a lot of tech companies, do we go gig plus plus, everything go gig, everything go freelance? There's been a lot of opinions, a lot of knowledge, a lot of thoughts around this. What's the take that you're seeing, or what are some of the insights you've uncovered around the gig economy?
Yeah, so you know, one phenomenon that we see quite a lot is that companies have a huge contingent workforce that is not reported on their financial statements. So for example, you know, I mentioned I used to run this workforce analytics team at IBM, and at IBM, we had 330,000 employees. That was like the number that's in their HR database. But you go to their LinkedIn page and it looks like 550,000 people say they work at IBM. So what's going on here? Why are there so many more people that claim to work at a company?
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Then the company claims to work there. And that, of course, is just a sample. Only a sample of people actually have online profiles. So the real situation is that a huge fraction of their workforce is contingent labor. In some cases, up to 2/3. So that in some ways is kind of just a legal artifact. It doesn't really matter when you're assessing a company's workforce who's classified as a W-2 employee and who's classified as a contingent worker. So I think there's real limitations into how companies categorize their own workforce, and that creates for all sorts of incentive misalignment. Companies really only need to report their diversity metrics on their official employees, so that can lead to some greenwashing. They only need to report geographic distributions based on their official employees, so that might lead them to kind of understate the extent to which they're offshoring. So you really don't get an accurate view of a company's workforce from just looking at their official employees. And companies do have incentive to expand to contingent workers and also gig workers, also freelancers. And that is just, it's kind of like the shadow workforce in a way, because they are not required to disclose that information. So I think that that worries me, you know, just from an accounting perspective. So, you know, it's just unknown and in some ways unknowable. So we're trying to kind of back into that as much as possible. And I think what we're seeing more of, but it's a little hard to say whether this is a real trend, is that companies will expand more geographically. I think it's kind of, you know, up in the air whether this latest COVID crisis will cause more globalization or more nationalism. So I think we're kind of hoping that this creates a more integrated labor market across geographies. And the freelance economy is very global. So I think we're hoping that that expands, and it has been expanding, but it's a little too soon to tell, you know, whether this will persist.
Right, because I think it depends where in the economy you look at. I think some of the early signals when we look at startups, right, companies that are raising pre-seed, seeds, Series A, no longer do they need to be co-located in one city like New York City or Boston, but you could have a distributed team, different cities in the United States, different cities in both the United States and Europe, and even Asia and South America and Africa continental. So that expansion is continuing because talent is global, and a distributed team could work from anywhere, which I think is really fascinating. And we've seen that with some of our portfolio companies as well, both through DataFrame and DataPower, where that movement is happening. Have you particularly seen more of that shift happening quicker with startups being the innovation versus the big IBMs of the world, which actually already are global, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. So we didn't really segment this by startup or established companies, but we're certainly seeing this pressure in tech. So within tech, there's significant wage pressure, like wages are converging across, you know, kind of the more productive high wage cities and the lower wage cities. So that gap has been shrinking quite a lot in the past year or so.
I think that's so fascinating. And so we'll continue to see where that occurs, especially as the world continues to open up and we move back into this hybrid modality that we're at. Let's change gears of the conversation to Revelio Labs. You're the founder and CEO of Revelio Labs, focusing on workforce intelligence in New York City. And earlier this year, you had a raised round of capital. Can you tell us about your company being venture-backed and what you're doing to continue to scale the workforce intelligence?
Yeah, so it's been very exciting, and being venture-backed has really allowed us to grow very rapidly. So I'll put in a shameless plug. You know, if you're a talented data scientist or data engineer or economist, you know, give us a call, because we're looking. But yeah, basically the foundation of Revelio Labs is to create a ubiquitous source of workforce intelligence. We sometimes model ourselves a little bit after Bloomberg and companies like that who have created a ubiquitous source of financial intelligence. And, you know, if anyone's looking for financial data, they know they can find it from Bloomberg, Thomson Reuters, FactSet, S&P. And these are enormous companies. But when it comes to human capital data and employment data, that really does not exist. It's not even really close to that. There's so much data that's siloed in internal HR databases, which, like I mentioned before, really only include a fraction of the overall workforce of a company. But what's cool about this is that when an employee is stored in an HR database, that information is mirrored in the public domain. So, you know, you or I might be employed by a company and we're in that company's HR database, but we also report that information on our resume or LinkedIn profile or something like that. So there's a tremendous amount of information out there on profiles, on individuals' career paths and jobs and skills and how they describe their jobs. So that's just an incredibly rich database that we're continuously, you know, collecting and updating. There's also job listings, which can be a great proxy for the demand for labor. You can also get salaries from job postings, which is really very rich and changes every day. So you can see kind of day to day what's happening with wages. There's also sentiment out there. So, you know, sites that track employee reviews. There's also layoff notices. There's an act in the US called the WARN Act, stands for Worker Advanced Retraining Notification. So companies have to report layoffs 60 days in advance. There's immigration filings. There's so much data out there. And what we're doing, we're kind of bringing it all together into one place, and we're constructing this universal HR database. But, you know, the challenges there are pretty enormous. On the one hand, it's a huge set of data. There's tens of terabytes of data that come in every month. And also, there's just problems with the data in its rawest form. So first of all, people, you know, use job titles and seniority levels that are completely idiosyncratic. So different companies have different conventions for occupations and seniority levels. So we really have to create a taxonomy that updates, that changes with an evolving occupational landscape and a changing economy. We also really need to infer the activities that people do, because those are the building blocks of a job. All a job is a bundle of activities. So we really need to understand that. We need to understand that when one person says lawyer and another person says attorney, those are probably the same occupation. But when one person says product manager in Facebook versus a product manager at JP Morgan, those might be totally different occupations. So we really need to do all that natural language processing to categorize this data properly. You know, we're also creating enrichments and new features, predicting salaries and models of prestige and suitability to remote work, things like that. But we're also removing biases in the underlying data. So there's sampling bias. Not everyone's got an online profile. There's also lags in when people report a transition. So we really like the data to be point in time. That's really important for a lot of end users. So we need to produce a nowcast, basically predicting what will be retroactively revealed, since a lot of updates don't get reported immediately. So there's just a tremendous amount of challenges to make the data usable. And that's what we're doing. You know, somebody's got to do it. So we're trying to tackle those hard problems, and it's fun.
And from where you and the team of Revelio Labs have been, you're growing, you're scaling in the data science and data engineer arena. So there's a massive amounts of these databases and data sets that you're seeing each day. What's to come? Can you share with us a little bit about the product roadmap that your team's building out, or you're getting requests from your clients that are saying, we want to see more of this?
Yeah. So first of all, in the alternative data market, which we've been playing in, there's really a pretty wide distribution of sophistication. So there are some clients who just want a data feed. You know, they just say, okay, we're fine. Just give me, you know, terabytes of data every week or every month, and we'll just like have fun with it and talk to you never. So that's one set of clients. But then there are others that really, you know, maybe don't have teams of data scientists or data analysts to explore this on their own. So they're really looking for a little bit more insight. So a little bit more of that curation on our end. And so what we've done there is we've created a dashboard. And this dashboard is really popular now. So it's just a easy way to navigate with this complex set of data and get insights really quickly. So we've built a few new features recently. Typically, we have just tracking the workforce dynamics. You know, you might want to compare the composition of companies today for a set of companies. There's also being able to track those changes over time. Like, let's say the share of the company that is that has skills in TensorFlow. You know, that might be a useful metric. Also, tracking transitions. You know, where do people come from? Where do they go? That is a very popular feature. We also recently put together a screener, which is very useful for private equity firms who are looking to source new deals. And for us, I think we're lucky in that the data set is not specific to public companies, private companies, big, small. It doesn't really matter. As long as the company's got employees, that's part of the database. So being able to source companies through a screener can be very powerful for certain clients. And then for HR also, we have a talent acquisition tool. So you can discover new pools of talent and also be able to use the taxonomy that we've created. So you can navigate the job titles that are similar, the skills that are similar, the activities, and be able to be able to impose a lot of structure on data that they might even have internally. So all of those things are kind of new and getting some traction. It's a very new product, but it's really starting to take shape. And we're always changing it. You know, every new client gives us something that we can learn from.
This is all very exciting and can't wait to see more of that in the product that you and the team are building at Revelio Labs. And if we're doing one more forward-looking insight for the audience, are there any trends or items that we should be seeing as signals for the future of work that should be on our radar for the next year into 2022 and beyond?
It's a great question. We do weekly newsletters where we try to report on some of the interesting things we see in the data. So we have a team of economists who work on some of these newsletters, and very often we'll collaborate with Bloomberg or Business Insider or some media publication to kind of get these insights out there. We've done a piece recently. Let me check out if there's any that we did most recently. We did one last week on the future of work. So what are the HR tech companies that are really dominating? And, then it gets even specific, who's dominating the self-driving car market, how do benefits help retention of women in the workforce? That's something that we've seen some changes in the past couple of years. We did a piece that I really liked, which was tracking the rise and fall of hustle culture. That's something we could see, people, having side hustles, that's been declining dramatically, which we thought was really pretty fascinating. So, on our site, you can check out, reveliolabs.com/news. And we really like doing these. It's generally really short. It's like a paragraph and a couple charts, but it's always data driven and it's always something non-obvious that we like to share.
Well, looking forward to more of these insights and trends and all of that today and moving forward on Humane Podcast. Thank you to Ben Zweig, the CEO of Revelio Labs and adjunct professor at NYU Stern. Ben, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, David. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.